All right, can you all hear me?
I can.
Yeah, good afternoon. This is Dennis Kennedy. I can hear you fine.
Okay, great. I think we've got a pretty good group here, and I'm not sure. Let's wait just a minute or so. I'm just looking at our participant list, and we're looking pretty good. And so why don't we go ahead and call this to order? And Jamie, where are you?
Right here.
There you are. You want to go ahead and do a roll call?
Sure. Can everyone hear me?
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay. Chief Justice Perigary?
Here.
Justice Hardesty?
Present.
Judge Bateman? Miss Lynn Beggs?
Here.
Thank you. Judge Brown?
Here.
Thank you. Judge Denton?
Here.
Thank you. Judge Draculich? Judge Glasson? Judge Graham? Judge Hardy?
Here.
Judge Higgins? Mr. Dennis Kennedy?
Right. Here.
Thank you. Judge Riggs?
Here.
Thank you. Judge Ritchie? Judge Stockard?
Here.
Thank you. And Judge Zimmerman will be joining us shortly. She's running a little late. But we do have a quorum.
All right, Jamie, did you get any calls from anybody indicating they could not make this meeting?
Judge Higgins will not be joining us, and Judge Bateman will not be joining us. That's the only declines I received.
Okay, let's wait just a few minutes for Judge Zimmerman, and hopefully we'll get Judge Ritchie and Judge Glasson. I know he intended to participate.
I do believe Judge Glasson has an afternoon calendar, so he'll be in and out, but he was planning to join us.
Okay.
Chief, maybe we could get the names of other people who are present but are not members.
Yes, yes. Let's, you've got a list, Jamie, of other people participating or present?
I have most of them, but there are some phone numbers that we need to identify. So can 775-580-5135, please give me your name. Okay, what about 775-580-5649? Can you please give me your name?
My name is Nancy Shrehan, and that's spelled S as in Sam, C-H-R-E-I-H-A-N as in Nancy, S as in Sam.
Great, thank you. And then we have a Mr. Batten, I believe, on here. Can I get a first name for that, please?
Hi, it's Dominica Batten, D-O-M-I-N-I-K-A.
Perfect, thank you.
You're welcome.
And I should have the rest of them, Chief.
Okay, very good. And you'll watch for any others who are popping in, and you'll notify us?
I will.
Okay, thank you. All right, and we've got a quorum. So welcome, first meeting. I'm anxious to see how this comes together and how we're going to structure this. It's an important task that we've been assigned. Pursuant to AB 43, we were charged with pulling together the group and having a discussion about some of the procedures and rules as they pertain to the Judicial Discipline Commission. I know there have been ongoing discussions throughout many legislative sessions, and Justice Hardesty has been right in the thick of that for many years and several sessions. I think, what, four sessions this has been percolating, and finally this has dropped into our lap by way of AB 43. And so, Jim, I'm going to turn this over to you, give just a little bit of background. You were there. You've been in the thick of this for a number of years. So why don't you give us a little background, a little information, and we'll try and tailor this as to what our function should be and what our scope of inquiry ought to be. So, Jim, why don't you take it?
Okay. Thanks, Chief. I think, as most people on this call may know, there has been various proposals over the past several years to make modifications either to the Code of Judicial Conduct or, as relevant here, issues raised concerning the statutes as well as the rules that are used by the Commission on Judicial Discipline to consider, investigate, and adjudicate, make recommendations, I should say, with respect to disciplinary actions that may be taken as a result of those investigations. There's also been issues before the legislature concerning funding of the Commission. I, for one, maintain that the commission has been, certainly was, and probably to a degree even today, is underfunded for the demands and the responsibilities placed on it and its staff, and frankly, the commissioners themselves, for entertaining some of the work that is put before them. To a limited degree, when I was Chief Justice, worked closely with Paul Dyla when he came on the commission to try to secure additional funding. There was some of that obtained. I think we also got offices changed from card tables to at least desks. Paul, I'm not sure if you even have desks now, but hopefully you've progressed that far. I think that this is gone from what I would consider to be a somewhat comical funding effort to a much more serious effort, and one that all of us, the court, the Supreme Court, the judiciary in general, and certainly the bar and the public should be cognizant of and make as a priority with the legislature. I think there has been, since 2015, other increases for other staff needs, but I'm not sure, from my own perspective, that that has been adequate or sufficient. And I know that the commission, from time to time, gets caught in cases, or I shouldn't say caught, but has cases that have been actively litigated. That has created huge demands on their budget, both for investigators and counsel. That is an ongoing concern and detracts or takes away from the commission's ability to handle other work that is pending in front of it, just because of the sheer volume of litigation connected with a case or two cases. I believe Mr. Sarnowski's run into that challenge, and I think Mr. Dyla and the commission he serves has run into the same challenge. Over the course of that time as well, because of some of that litigation and because of just general viewpoints that are different about what the commission should be doing and what its responsibilities are, proposals have been made to the legislature, I think both in 2017, again in 2019, from the Nevada Judges of Limited Jurisdiction on changes to either statutes or rules or both in the operation of the commission. And those have been vetted in front of the Judiciary Committee of the Assembly. And again, they surfaced in 2021 when I was Chief Justice. And I was requested at that time by the chair of the Judiciary Committee, Steve Yeager, to consider the court's evaluation with a commission of a variety of topics. It had been a long time, I guess, since we'd looked at a lot of this in depth. And so the question was, with a fresh pen, what, if anything, should this commission recommend that would be improvements to the function, operation of the commission that might be considered by the legislature in performing its functions under the Constitution. There is also this ongoing debate about whether rules provided in the Constitution for procedural aspects of the commission's function are somehow separate and apart from, and what's the scope of that provision? Does it run afoul of any legislative directives that might be provided that may be different? And should that be reevaluated as well? So I think it's really an opportunity for, and so frankly, the end game was from the from my understanding, from the committee's point of view, the Supreme Court is clearly charged and has the sole responsibility for establishing the judicial code of conduct. One would expect that the commission would fulfill its responsibilities in making sure that judges are meeting their responsibilities under the code of conduct through the Judicial Discipline Commission. Is that happening? Is that happening to the court's satisfaction, to the legal profession's satisfaction, and to the satisfaction of the public? So this commission was created, or requested, I guess, for the purpose of taking a deep breath, determining whether there are improved ways for operation and perhaps even funding issues. Looking at whether any other recommendations are appropriate or warranted, consistent with best practices across the country in this area. So I think that's how we ended up with it. I think it's a genuine interest on the part of the legislature to have a better footing and get input from a Supreme Court commission on how best to proceed. So I think that's where we're at. If there are statutes that should be reexamined, this commission might recommend that. If there are rules of procedure that have been enacted by the commission, recommendations might be made concerning how those might be affected. Those recommendations might go to the commission only, or to the legislature, or both, or may even involve a modification to the Constitution. The possibilities here are as broad as this commission might choose to recommend based on the evidence that is provided to it that supports or doesn't support these issues. So that's kind of an overview, Chief. I think our responsibility is to offer guidance to the legislature on its roles that are articulated in the Constitution. And I think that's really the benefit that we can bring to this from what they requested.
Great, thank you, Jim. I appreciate the summary and the perspective. Let's go ahead and move to public comment. At this point, I'd like to limit public comment to 3 minutes so that we can get on with our business at hand. So is there any public comment at this point? Okay, I'm not hearing any. Let's go ahead and move to item 3 on the agenda, discussion of commission scope and mission. And under tab 1, pages 3 and 5, Judge Glasson, is he present yet? This was an item he wanted to discuss.
It does not appear.
What's that?
It does not appear that he's joined us yet, Chief Justice.
Okay, this is under authority of the NJDC to adopt rules. As Judge Glasson isn't here, is there any other member of the commission that would like to address this item at this point? And Jamie, perhaps you can give a call to Judge Glasson to see if he's available.
Chief, do you know the purpose for Judge Glasson's agenda item? Can you better define what he had in mind or what these words mean to you? I may or may not have a comment.
My understanding, and again, I haven't spoken to him in any depth. He's trying to understand just the intersection of the Constitution, the court's inherent powers, and just how all of this works, the constitutional provisions allowing for the commission to create its own rules, as opposed to statutory corrections that we may be able to make. And so that's what I think he was getting at, David.
Well, Chief, through you, of course, I would be welcome to some conversation, because as I read the materials, it seems like the Constitution sets forth specific authority for the legislature, specific authority for the commission. And then, according to some that I've heard, the Constitution itself creates structure. And Justice Hardesty mentioned that a moment ago by way of constitutional amendment. And just discussing how we can get to where the different lanes are would be helpful for me, as we begin talking about recommendations for the Supreme Court, recommendations for the legislature, and possibly larger and more difficult recommendations for constitutional amendment.
Well, I'd like to weigh in on that and offer some comment that maybe others could comment about. I don't know whether anybody had a chance to take a look at the constitutional provision that creates the Judicial Commission, but I think that's a great starting point. And to me, it seems maybe too clear, and it isn't as clear, but it seems to me that when looking at the Constitution, Article 6, Section 21, there are two particularly important provisions. Section 7, paragraph 7 of Section 21. Section 6 says the Supreme Court shall adopt a code of judicial conduct. So that is describing the rules of professional behavior that is to guide judges in their conduct while sitting on the bench and adjudicating cases and running for office, et cetera. Section 7, the commission shall adopt rules of procedure for the conduct of its hearings and any other procedural rules it deems necessary to carry out its duties. That seems to focus on the procedure by which the cases travel their way through, get to and travel their way through the commission, to me. And then the broader authority with respect to what transpires in terms of what's to take place is that found in section, the section dealing with the legislature and the legislature's authority to create statutes that deal with various aspects of discipline and the like. And then section 11 circles back and seems to give the commission discretion to designate for each separate hearing an attorney or attorneys, summon witnesses necessary, grant immunity as necessary, and then exercise further powers that the legislature creates from time to time by statute. Now, I don't know, reasonable people, I guess, may disagree, but that seems to me to be the nature of this constitutional provision. So I guess when you're talking about rules, and again, I haven't talked to Judge Glasson about what his interest was in raising this question, but my understanding of the issue about the commission is the scope of the word rules of procedure.
Could I ask then, just by way of example, I've heard a lot over the years of bifurcation, separating investigation from prosecution.
Right.
Under which grant of authority does bifurcation fall?
It's a good question. I think that's one of the reasons this commission's here, David. If the commission were to conclude that that is something that is exclusively within the scope of Section 7, but still felt it was worth a recommendation, then that's probably a recommendation that would go to the commission. Alternatively, if the group felt like this is something that is a legislative responsibility, then we would make a legislative change. Or if it's something that is that unclear, maybe that's something that warrants a constitutional clarification.
Well,
I think that takes you back to the bringing out a fresh pen. What is as compared with other commissions, best practices, our own commission and how it's operating, experiences from judges who participated in the process, the public's perception, what is best? And I think what has happened in, this is my own personal opinion, what has happened in prior judiciary hearings is you have judges and lawyers, or principally judges and others making observations, comments, expressing opinions to a judiciary committee largely made up of lay people who are unclear themselves about what is the best way to proceed. And I think we should approach this with a fresh slate, recognizing that there may be some differences of opinion about how you interpret one provision or the other of the Constitution and whether it's necessary to remedy it. So that's where I come from, Dave.
And David, as an overlay, if you look at Section 5, C, is the bifurcation a standard for investigation, which is apparently a legislative aspect to this. So I think a lot of this, there's a murkiness here that we've got to sort through.
Because I... talking too much. We have a lot of members on this panel.
Go ahead.
I want to learn from others as well.
All right. Anybody else have thoughts?
All right, then I will.
Go ahead.
I just wanted to just clarify the authority separate from the wisdom. It may make sense to bifurcate, for example. I'm just using that as the center example, but I wanted to just kind of know where it fit, if at all. And then as it goes to the wisdom, Chief Justice Perigary, I was on the Article 6 Commission 16, 17 years ago. And I remember having presentations from different experts. And when I began reading the materials and then some of the materials produced internally with the commission, I yearned for those best practices as well. And for close to 18 years now, I've been following Cynthia Gray and reading literature from the National Center for State Courts. And I wonder if this commission contemplates inviting her or someone of her stature to be prepared with some of our questions and to walk us through best practices and predominant structures elsewhere. Is it possible that we might get outside help that's broader than just the PowerPoint and other materials that we've received today?
Yes, in fact, I've been in contact with the Judicial College, and there's a fellow there by the name of Keith Fisher, who does a lot of this nationally. He's done it nationally, and he's a distinguished fellow at the Judicial College. I wanted to get this meeting set and see where our direction was, and I think he would be a definite resource, and he is willing to help in any way we need him to. But I wanted to get some direction from all of you before I even reached out further to him. So yes, we do have that resource, David.
And Chief, if I could weigh in, I would hope that all the commissioners would let us know what resources they'd like to hear from.
Yes.
This is an honest, sincere, meaningful assessment of where we are and what we're doing. And what can we do better? And I think we have an opportunity here to take a fresh look. As you pointed out, the Article 6 Commission was at the beginning of Ron's and my terms, 18 years ago. And I don't think we've done a hell of a lot since then about this topic. So. Now's a good time to take a look at it, I think.
Well, as I've been invited into this work only recently, I just have a sense that there is this history and competing opinions. And one of the most valuable tools for me would be neutrality from somebody of great experience and stature, who's kind of detached from the recent or long past, so that together we can identify those best practices.
Well, I think that is true, but I also think, David, that there is value in taking a look at what other discipline commissions around the country have experienced in terms of what's worked and what challenges have existed, and our own commission. Rightly, a lot of the work of the commission takes place in private because, quite frankly, none of it should and doesn't surface to the public. So getting some insight as to the kinds of challenges and workload and those kinds of things would be useful for the commissioners to share with this commission. We're not talking about individual cases, just the challenges that comes with that. I mean, I'll skip forward to one area that is on the agenda that was at the request of a number of judges around the state. Why the commission did not or chose to affirmatively decline to pursue complaints associated with violations of the code of conduct for campaign violations. And that is very troublesome. And in this environment is particularly problematic. And so that gets to a very specific issue, similar to the kind of procedural issue that you raised. But I think we need to step back and learn not only from neutrals, but learn from experience of others and our own.
This is Mark Denton. I would definitely welcome Cynthia Gray. Cynthia Gray's involvement in this. She's very knowledgeable about the entire judicial discipline scenario in the United States throughout the country. And she helped us the last time these issues were considered. And she's definitely somebody that we should think about inviting to take part.
Okay. Does anyone else have any comment in that regard? If that's your direction to me, I'll reach out to the Judicial College and either Cynthia Gray or Mr. Fisher, as I was provided his name previously. Comment? You're all being shy. Come on, Bert.
Well, I guess that leads me to this question. The purpose of the question, first, the commission was to examine some of the topics we're talking about.
Yeah.
Are there topics people want to put on the agenda? We've got them on the agenda here. We haven't gotten to them specifically. Maybe we need to. But maybe... the view of this commission is that no changes are needed and everything's fine.
Could be.
Well, I would disagree with that.
I also would disagree.
Well, maybe it'd be worthwhile to hear from people who, what you've been appointed to this commission, what would you like this commission to study, evaluate, and why?
So what I was hoping this commission would study and evaluate is an examination of the procedural rules of the commission that are not neutral or fair to judges, and see if we can make any improvements in that area.
Okay, and then if we move to my tab two, pages, I think we've all got the same materials, correct? Yeah.
Yes, sir.
And I understand, Ann, you'd like to specifically address rules 3.6, 6, 12.1, 18, 26, and 27. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay, why don't we start there?
Let me catch up with you.
Why don't we just start with rule one and go down.
Okay.
Yeah, ma'am.
Yes.
All right. Go ahead. You've got rule one scope. And you've got definitions, and I see somebody has suggested a strikeout on rule four. Is that you, Ann?
No, that was Judge Glasson.
Okay, I wish you were here. Jamie, have we heard anything?
Yes, he'll be joining us closer to 3. He is still on the bench, Chief.
So okay. That's his document and not what I submitted to you.
Okay.
So.
I thought that incorporated yours.
It did not.
Okay, then I just had the indication that you had specific rules 3.6, 6, 12, 0.1, 18, 26, and 27. Is that right?
Yes. Now I have to bring up my copy. Okay. So one of the concerns that judges have had in the past is with respect to transparency by the Judicial Discipline Commission. Their website indicates that any documents that are filed with the commission are posted on the website, and it would be great if that was true, but it's not. The commission has taken the position that anyone can contact the commission and request documents that have been filed. But if you don't know they've been filed, how do you know how to request them? So they don't generally put everything on the website that's been filed except for formal statements of charges. And if the commission finds that somebody's violated, they'll post that ruling on there. They don't post decisions by the Supreme Court. They don't post pre-hearing motions. They don't post any dismissals. They also remove documents from their website at their own discretion. Once the documents are posted on the website, they should not be removed. So one of the concerns of the judges was the lack of transparency by the commission. Rule 6.
That's rule what?
Rule 6.
Okay. Oh, I think I found your materials right here. Does everybody have a copy of your material, Ann?
No, I sent it to you, but I don't think it's in what everybody was provided with.
I received a copy of the red line rules that Judge Glasson submitted, and then I received a survey. I did not receive any other additions, any other red line rule submissions. If you want to forward it to me, Judge, I'll go ahead and send it.
Which judge are you talking to?
You judge Zimmerman, sorry.
Okay. I'm just going to forward the email I sent to Justice Perigary.
Thank you.
So another area of concern that the judges would like to look at Rule 12.
Okay.
It would be nice if the commission was required to provide a copy of the complaint and all the corresponding documents to the respondent prior to scheduling an interview or providing an answer. This It's difficult to discuss a complaint that's been filed against you if you don't know exactly what it says.
Okay.
Rule 16. Seems like it would be fair if the commission would schedule a hearing at a time that is mutually agreed upon by the parties and the commission. That does not happen a lot. And also that venue should be in the jurisdiction where the alleged misconduct occurred. I would also propose a new rule to permit electronic testimony at the discretion of the parties. Kind of seems like a no-brainer in this day and age. We would also like to propose a new rule that requires the commission to rule on pre-hearing motions prior to the minute before the hearing starts. Possibly 14 days in advance, because that can impact seriously how a judge and their attorney proceeds with the hearing as far as witnesses and evidence to be presented. And those pre-trial hearing motion or those pre-hearing motions should be allowed oral argument in public unless the parties stipulate otherwise. And that those motions could be heard remotely.
Okay.
All right. Rule 26, this is an important one. We would propose that the rule be amended to require the commission to consult with both parties as to how much time each party will require to present their case. Traditionally, how it happens, if the prosecution states they need 3 hours, then automatically the defense is given 3 hours. Which might sound equitable, but it's not if the defense needs more time. Each party should be allowed the amount of time requested to present their case, and the commission could hold them to that time that they've requested. So those are just a few of them that we would like to discuss and consider.
And I also had an indication you wanted to discuss Rule 24, evidence and due process. Interrogatories.
Yes. What is the remedy under Rule 24 if the procedural rules of the commission conflict with the Nevada Rules of Civil Procedure? For example, venue, interrogatories. For venue, I would refer everyone to NRS 13.020. For interrogatories, I'd refer everyone to Rules 26 and 33 of the Nevada Rules of Civil Procedure.
Okay. All right, did you have more, Ann?
Rule 27, an order of dismissal should be filed with the clerk of the Supreme Court and posted on the commission's website. It doesn't happen.
Okay, is that it?
It's a good start.
Yeah, that gives us something to ponder.
I don't want to waste all my oxygen today.
Okay, everybody heard these particular concerns. Do we have any other concerns?
I think Judge Riggs was going to comment.
Let's see, I didn't. Oh, yes.
Thank you, Chief Justice Perigiri. You know, I'm interested, and I'm wondering if it's within the scope of this committee's work or this commission's work, in the 30,000 foot view, if we can take a look at this. Judge Hardy mentioned Cynthia Gray at the National Center for State Courts, and you had talked about Keith Fisher at the National Judicial College. I'm interested in a top to bottom review of the way that our Judicial Discipline Commission handles discipline cases. For instance, you know, Judge Zimmerman was just discussing about how, you know, these, we should be concerned with the, you know, civil procedure rules being followed or something similar. Why do we call this a prosecution? You know, this is as a person who in my former practice, you know, I had the honor to represent judges before this commission. It does feel very much more like a prosecution than a civil matter or even a disciplinary matter before any of the other boards. So I'm wondering about that. I'm very interested to see the comparison with other states, how they handle this process in a dignified way so that judges can feel like they're going through a fair process rather than a criminal prosecution. Also, you know, I asked, and I'm sorry if I'm jumping ahead, but I asked for the issue of term limits to be addressed. It looks like from the materials that we have today that Nevada is a 6-year state. However, you know, I think that I could be wrong, but it seems to me that many of our commissioners have been on the Judicial Discipline Commission much longer than 6 years. I think that recommendations for term limits would be fair and appropriate here. I'm also interested in an issue that's further down the list in a consideration of gender equity on these panels. On the Standing Commission, according to the Commission on Judicial Discipline's website, there are 6 men and 1 woman on the alternate members. There are 8 men, 3 women. And since at least 2016, about an equal number of women judges have been subject to the proceedings of the Discipline Commission as men. And I think that is reflected in some of the public comments that come out of public disciplinary proceedings. And so I think a discussion of that matter is something I'd like to hear at some point during our work. Thank you.
Okay.
Can I just clarify something at the outset about term limits? The PowerPoint indicated Nevada was a 6-year term state, but when I look at the Constitution itself, Section 21, subparagraph 4, it provides that each term is 4 years. And I might be missing something there. My understanding is that Nevada is a 4-year term state.
And that sounds, it sounds reasonable, like a reasonable interpretation of the Constitution to me, Judge Hardy, but I think that many members of the Standing Commission have been on the panel much longer than 4 years or 6 years.
Great.
So in any event, Judge Riggs, you're proposing a term limit, whether the initial term is 4 years or 6 years?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Okay, anyone else with specific provisions, specific concerns? Nothing.
I have a question, Chief.
Yeah.
So I've been on many of these boards and the like, and often we do a lot of this stuff and nothing comes to fruition. Is there really a possibility that we can make a change, or are we just doing lip service?
No, I think it's anticipated that we compile and we flesh this out. We report back to the legislature. And again, as Justice Hardesty indicated, once we distill what we're going to look at, we need to go back and determine whether or not it's going to be a legislative issue, whether it's a Supreme Court issue, whether it's a constitutional issue to effectuate change. Is that your understanding, Jim? I think that's the only way to really take these issues and address them where you're going to have some type of an impact.
I think there is every expectation by the legislature that this, and AB 43, by the way, was passed unanimously, I believe, in both houses, that the Supreme Court will come back with a report of its study. This is a big topic. Perhaps the study will not be sufficiently developed or understood or dealt with by the time the legislature convenes or by the time BDRs are requested. But I think we need to proceed on the basis that the legislature requested this. I take them at their word, Bert. And I believe that they are very interested in hearing about these topics and what the commission thinks is best in terms of best practices. There may be dissents, there may be concurrences. My hope would be that the commission would find some general agreement on a variety of topics. And by the way, you've got members of the commission sitting on this here for both resource and their own opinions. So they can make direct change if they thought that it was warranted, or at least they can initiate it with their colleagues. But I do think I take a holistic approach to these things. And, you know, nobody would have ever thought that we were going to have much progress on pretrial risk assessments till a commission recommended it. And there are other examples of the rules of criminal procedure now in the district courts. Nobody ever thought that was going to happen until it was recommended to the Supreme Court and it adopted it. So I don't consider this to be an idle effort. If anybody feels that way or think they're wasting their time, then they perhaps should ask the chief to substitute them for somebody who does believe in this process.
Thank you for that.
Did I hear, Justice Hardesty, did I hear you correctly that the Supreme Court also invites this commission's review of the code itself? Or does that exceed the scope of the work of this commission? I think about some of the commentary that could be updated with decisional authority or the provisions, commentary specifically relating to a judge's electronic presence through the social media world. Should some of that be refreshed?
I think it should be refreshed, David, as Chief Justice at the, when I gave my State of the Judiciary address, I urged that the court reevaluate the Judicial Code of Conduct. I would say that the Judicial Code of Conduct is only implicated in this commission and its work to the extent that the commission is of the view or evidence demonstrates that the enforceability of the code is problematic by the discipline commission because of confusion that exists either within the code itself or with commentary within the code. But beyond that, I don't think that's within the scope of this commission. My hope is, and I, as Justice Perigary knows, I have asked the court to convene a commission to study a revisions to the code of conduct. It's been years since we've done that. And I'm hopeful that at some point probably after I'm gone from the court. But I think at some point, I'm hoping that the court will do that. And, you know, in fairness to the court, we've made a lot of progress on a lot of different issues. The Nevada Rules of Civil Procedure have been revised. The Nevada Rules of Appellate Procedure are currently under study by a separate commission co-chaired by Justices Pickering and Silver. The Nevada Rules of Criminal Procedure have been enacted after a two-year study. The rules governing alternative dispute resolution and short trial rules are currently under study under a separate commission that is looking at those with reports that are due out, frankly, by the end of September. The rules are endless about either new ones being adopted or old ones who haven't been looked at for years. And I share the view that the code of conduct is due for a healthy review and update. But I think the fundamental question here for this commission is again, examining the commission, how it operates, its procedures and so forth. But I would say that if the commission believes or has evidence or recommendations that says, well, one of the impediments or one of the confusions that exist in the enforcement process is the confusion around the interpretation of these rules, but, you know, that's capable of being remedied through a case. If there is a legitimate dispute about the scope or the enforcement of a code of conduct provision in a given case, then I think that's something that can be addressed if the judge who's the subject of that decides to bring it to the Supreme Court for an interpretation. Or in the meantime, hopefully a commission will take a broader look at this. The Article 6 Commission took a pretty broad look at Article 6, but the scope of that was so broad, I'm not sure that a lot more could be done beyond what the commission was able to do at the time. That's just my own opinion.
Great. All right, let's get back. We got Judge Zimmerman's specific concerns. I want to know what other concerns the other members of this commission may have as they pertain to the rules themselves, other than what Judge Zimmerman indicated. I'm trying to get a list now and create a structure for us going forward. So whatever you've got, let's hear about it. And I'm gonna ask after this meeting that you send in any other ideas, any other areas you want us to look at, and provide any other materials that we can distribute before the next meeting. Jim, is your hand up?
It is. I'd like to know if the commission is of the view that it's laboring under any ongoing budget constraints with specifics, and what recommendations this commission could make to the legislature concerning fiscal challenges that the commission labors under. Yeah, I raised earlier the issue about enforcement of the code provisions dealing with candidates who run for office. I'd like to know about that. And what is there an official position or not? If there's a problem there, then what are we dealing with? And now we've got not nearly as many elections as we faced a couple of years ago when everybody was running for office, but we do have a number of justices of the peace who are running for election. We now have a number of open seats on the district court and that need to be filled by election. And so this is an ongoing concern. We got two Supreme Court justices who are running for re-election unopposed, so that won't be presumably a problem, but certainly elections is an ongoing issue, and how that gets handled and enforced and the application of the code limitations on candidates is a big deal.
I guess adding on to that, Justice Hardesty, I would like to know what the authority was for that decision to decide not to investigate complaints about the misconduct by candidates. And also, you know, my understanding is that there was an issue with volume, or, you know, the volume of work that would come out of that endeavor compared to what the members of the commission are already doing. I would like to know what sort of volume of complaints they received that made the commission believe that they weren't going to be able to handle them all, or that it wasn't, that they couldn't actually handle them.
Following up on that same theme, Chief Justice Hart, Perigary and Justice Hardesty, I would like to know whatever the Supreme Court is comfortable telling us about why the Standing Committee on Election Practices was dissolved. I was on that Standing Committee 10 or 12 years ago, and we were very busy during the election cycle. And I'm not commenting upon anything modern, because I'm completely out of touch with whatever the commission may have rejected or didn't receive. But I knew then that sometimes candidates would weaponize their campaigns with complaints and ferreting out when this Committee on Election Practices should engage and not was difficult. And if it was dissolved by the Supreme Court, why? And how can we then restore it into the rules of the commission? So I want some of that background information, not the deliberative internal details, but something that helps us understand why it's better placed with the commission and not the Standing Committee.
Sure, there's a record in the administrative docket regarding that. I think we ought to have a presentation to the commission about that. Yeah.
And my understanding, going back 18 years, as part of the Article 6 Commission, was from what I can recall, and it'll be, I'm sure, in the record with the ADKT, was David Sarnowski's concern at that time that it was such a resource drain, in the sense that they were monitoring all these elections, the Committee for Election Practices. And then when they were making determinations, they were getting pulled into federal court. And there were several instances where it just completely decimated their budget. And that was, Jim, is that, do you recall that?
I recall the that issue. I don't think that was, I think there was more to the issue as well. But I think that the problem was the committee finding itself getting sued as a result of determinations that it made about this issue. But quite frankly, whether the committee was making those determinations or the discipline commission was making those determinations, if there were going to be suits that dealt with those election challenges, they were going to be there anyway. But it doesn't change the code, what it says and how it applies. Somebody has to make those decisions and proceed forward. Doesn't mean we just take them off the table. But I think Judge Hardy makes a good point. What happened to the committee that was dealing with those issues about 15, 18 years ago?
Right. And Jamie, can you go back and see if you could find minutes or the hearing from the ADKT that Jim just referenced?
Yeah, let me do a little bit of research and I will see what I can find.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's some, probably some transcripts too on the public hearings that we had the court held on that.
Yeah, yep.
I will take a look.
Okay, let's get back to other particular issues. What else? And going back from the members we have from Judicial Discipline Commission, can we get some comments from you as to some of those issues, Justice Hardesty? just introduced. Nobody? Okay, well, what about other issues that you want to address? Members, so far we've got ANZ issues and election practices.
So I'm assuming under agenda item 6B, the structure of commission proceedings, that's basically a catch-all for bifurcation, all these other issues that we're talking about in to an extent. Because if not, I would definitely add this, the issue of bifurcation of the proceedings of the investigation and the formal hearing, most definitely to the list of items to address.
Okay, yep. Bifurcation, term limits. All right, anything else anyone wants to add as a focus and scope? I see Judge Glasson is here, Richard.
Thank you, Justice. If I could add, I apologize for being late. I rushed through the calendar, but I assure you that justice was served nevertheless. What about, what I was concerned with was language. I've never liked the idea of a thing called a complaint and then something later called a formal statement of charges. I always liked the idea that at first we start with an accusation and then if it goes further, it should be called a complaint, or you can call it a formal complaint, because the NRCP doesn't talk about formal statements. It talks about complaints. And I would like to see the language match. That's all.
Okay, and I think we were there earlier, you had sent out materials. We got redline materials, and I think the members of this group, you all received those, right? Okay, and you'd gone through a lot of definitional items and we've got those. Do you want to go through and summarize anything in particular, Judge?
No, it was just that. I note that there's oftentimes between the commission's rules and the statute, there's some things that don't match up and could be clarified, but I don't think it has to be the focus of this committee. I think that's something we could take up directly.
Okay.
I'd like to ask Chief if the commissioners or members of the discipline commission who serve on this commission or members of this commission have identified any statutory language or problems that they think should be examined.
Okay, not hearing much.
Mark Denton, it's occurred to me over the years that perhaps the name of the commission might be changed to Judicial Conduct Commission as opposed to Judicial Discipline Commission. There have been times when I've been conversing with somebody about something that I had to go to. And I would say, I have to go to a judicial discipline commission meeting. Oh, and by the way, I'm a member of the commission. Point being that, you know, we talk about the judicial conduct rules, and it just seems to me that maybe, you know, words do mean a lot. And it's one of the things that Justice Hardesty just addressed. Maybe we got to think about that name of our commission.
Mm-hmm. Well, because that takes us, I really appreciate that suggestion. I think it's a great point, mm-hmm. But just to take it one step further, the vast majority of the determinations by the commission, which are sight unseen and appropriately so, don't result in anything.
That's true.
So the
plus it would require an amendment to the Constitution.
Correct. Exactly. That's exactly right. And that's one of the areas that I think is germane to the conversation. I haven't looked, I'll confess my ignorance on this point, but does the commission publish statistics on its website, and does it, and are there any other reports that it furnishes the legislature under 1.4, whatever it is, on statistics that are different? Do those statistics differ in any way? And do those statistics include an identification of all of the matters that come before the commission that are procedurally, routinely disposed of because they lack merit?
I
haven't bothered to take a look at that. I probably should have before posing the question, but you're now here as a resource, so I thought I'd ask.
I think that's something that Paul Dyla would definitely be to address. I can't address that myself.
If I could just add one other point to this, what are the statistics that the commission compiles? If there are confidential statistics, AB 43 didn't include that, but what is the nature of the statistics that are kept? And should other statistics be kept as well? I don't know, but it seems like that's a worthwhile conversation that helps inform commissions like this who examine the work, but I think also helps inform the funding body that is looking at this too.
I agree, and again, I think that's something that Paul would to address.
Judge Denton, can you make it a point of trying to find information related to Justice Hardesty's question and bring that back to us?
Sure.
Okay.
There are reports on the commission website. Back to 2012, the most recent one was 2020 and 2021. Judge Bell and Judge Freeman, when they presented at the Judicial Summit, used a lot of the statistics and graphs that are publicly available in those reports. Mm-hmm.
Tom, I'm not picking on you, or I'll just follow up with this question. What is the situation with respect to the budget support for the commission? Adequate, inadequate, needs help? I know in 2015 it was a big challenge. My impression is it continues to be a challenge since then, and it's always been, going clear back to Sarnowski's time, influenced or affected is probably a better word, by litigation brought by people who are disputing the commission's activities or their work, and maybe creating disproportionate financial impact compared to other routine cases. But can we get an update on the budget and whether more resources could be used? It seems to me this commission provides an opportunity to communicate to the legislature that is a component of any work of the commission.
Sure, I just honestly don't know about the budget. I think you're right. It's probably largely driven by the number of hearings that the commission holds and the travel expenses related thereto, and then the outside litigation, but I don't have a good feel.
Is there a way to get that information?
Well, I think the budget is public record. The question is whether or not improvements to the budget could be made and for what purposes, and how could that be explained and supported to the legislature from this commission.
Could we ask Mr. Dyla to answer the question in written form?
Yep.
The specific answer to the question about budgeting, I think he's in the best position, and I think that's critical information as well.
Commissioner, is this Dennis Kennedy? This is a few years ago, but I was retained as counsel for the commission in a couple of large cases. And in terms of the budget, we didn't have any money to defend these cases. And to a great extent, our litigation strategy was driven by the budget. There just really wasn't much money there. And we ended up going to the legislature with my firm's account receivable and begging for money to pay the attorney fees, which we got. But that's a few years ago. But it, Justice Hardesty said back in the Sarnowski days, it was a really, really big problem. And there just wasn't a regular source of funds to conduct the defense of litigation. And so that has in the past been a problem.
May I have a clarification about what litigation we're talking about? Are we talking about defending the commission from litigation post determination of a judicial discipline matter, or litigation against judges?
Defending the commission, a couple of federal civil rights cases brought by judges, and those were financially problematic for the commission.
Thank you.
Yeah, and again, I think as Justice Hardesty indicated, this also provides an opportunity to get this information to the legislature as well. If those members on this commission who are also members on judicial discipline, if you could get that information from Mr. Dyla and provide that back, or we'll ask that he provide some type of information to us, that would be helpful. Okay. All right. Is there any other matters that you want to address as part of the scope of this commission, other than what we've already received? No? Okay, then I think we can begin to tailor this and structure it and shape the discussion at a more substantive level. Justice Hardesty, have you got anything else?
No, I think the next commission, I'd recommend, Chief, if we can secure presentations from either or both Ms. Gray and Fisher would be terrific. But I would like to, maybe you and I can communicate with them about an overarching presentation that would be useful. And I'm sure they've been involved in a number of studies, either in support of or revisions to other commissions. That would be very helpful. And I think for our next commission too, maybe we could secure some of the data that we've requested. I thought that, appreciated Tom's reminder of this. I thought the slides that were provided by Judge Freeman and Judge Bell at the Judicial Summit summarizing some of the statistical data was informative, and I think would provide a record background for what we're doing here. I think
we probably should get those slides and make them a part of our record and materials for the other commission members to look at. And then a budget summary and hearing from Mr. Dialo on some of the specific questions that were raised today. At least it gives us a better footing when you start looking at some of these other topics.
Okay, I agree. And then is it too ambitious to request that these items that we have identified in particular, Judge Zimmerman and Judge Glasson, if you would be prepared to give a presentation on the specifics of those items we have identified. Also, Judge Riggs, as well, we can get into more detail and create more of a discussion, I'm hoping, on these items we've identified. Is that fair?
Fair.
Okay. And I see as this comes together, we'll get ultimately to that point to where we're going to determine where this lives and the direction that we're going to give in our report, whether it be something the Supreme Court needs to address, the legislature needs to address, or would take a constitutional amendment, or the commission itself if it wants to take on some of these items we've identified. Is that fair? Okay. Does anybody else have anything at this point? Nope. All right, then we're going to move. Next meeting and location, I'd like to get a meeting set. I don't think there's a whole lot on our plate to where we couldn't have a meeting sooner than later. I'd like to schedule it within the next month. Is that reasonable? Okay, and Jamie, what is the best vehicle to do that?
Usually what we do, Chief, is I will work with you to see what your availability looks like. We'll get an assortment of dates and I will pull the group.
Okay, good. So I'd like to set another meeting within the next month, and I think we can distill this, and I will start reaching out to Ms. Gray and Mr. Fisher and try and solidify that as well. And then we'll get that overarching view and presentation. And that I think will be helpful too to further discussion. On those items we've identified. Jim, do you have anything else?
No, thanks, Chief.
Okay, anybody else? All right, move to public comment. Is there any public comment? Again, I'd like to limit that to 3 minutes. No members of the public? Okay, very good. Then I think we're going to adjourn. I want to thank you for your time. This, I think there's a lot of opportunity here, and I'm hoping we can foster some good discussion in the next meeting. So again, thank you all.
Thank you, Chief.
Bye.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Take care.